That's nice. That's really nice. I want to thank you. Okay, folks. Where's my friend at? Well, yes. Okay, you know what? When I came into this program, you know, I had an occasion to call Southern California from San Francisco, and I wanted some information as to what was going on with H&I, you see. I was, that's very impolite back there, God damn it. Oh, it pisses me off when I'm talking and some asshole starts talking, man. Pray for me. And if you got to pray for me, you might as well pray for yourself, too, you know? Anyway, you know what? I had to call Southern California. I had to call the World Service Office. I got this cat man that was doing a job out of his garage, you know? And he was doing a hell of a job. And I really didn't know the guy, and I got to know him. Most of my contact with your speaker for tonight has been over the telephone. He's been a world of help to me. He's been a world of help to everybody throughout the United States. I got people I'm in contact with back in the East Coast and down in the Gulf and up north that talk about this man like he was a higher power. And I'd like to give you my good friend Jimmy Kay.
Yeah, I wish we were up to this part here. It says the closing prayer. First of all, my name is Jimmy. I'm a recovered addict. You notice I said recovered. There's a lot of discussion about should we be recovered or recovery. We say both around here, so you can take your choice. It's one of the things I like about this program. We always have a choice. Bob just told a few of you what he thinks. And see, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to talk, that's fine. If you've really got something to say, I'll sit down right there and listen to you. And I'll tell you why. One of the reasons I said that is I'm going to go back a little ways. I'm going to go back to 1962. Or around, I think, the spring, early summer, just about maybe about this time. And that time I was married to another woman. My kids were fairly small, a couple of them. Coming home from work one afternoon, I turned the radio on, and I heard some news that disturbed me greatly. I heard that SOB Khrushchev was coming to Los Angeles. Maybe some of you weren't even born then, and maybe this is old history, you know. But I got so incensed when I heard that, I went home and I said to my wife, tomorrow afternoon I'm coming home from work early. I want you to have some bags packed. And we're taking off. I won't breathe the same smog as that SOP. And she said, I don't care what the thing is that takes us out of town for a couple of days. I'm willing. Let's go, you know. So what I want to prove is how manageable our lives become after we're on the program for a while. You know, maybe some of you are going through that phase. How nice it is to be able to manage your life again. Make meaningful choices. You know, all those good words we hear at meetings and from our sponsors and a lot of other people that we don't listen to half the time, you know, which is about my way of doing things too, you know. I try to find the person who agrees with me. Then I feel that I've been approved and I go ahead on it, you know. And that'll probably sink in a little bit later in the program, you know. But anyway, it shows you the manageability that I had gotten into my life. I could cope with things and make decisions, you know. And the first step seemed a long, long ways away in the background at that time. when I had to admit that I was powerless over my addictions, and that my life had become unmanageable, because it felt good to be able to do these things that I decided upon, you know. So the result was, anyway, that we took off. We didn't know where we were going, but we wound up late Friday night up in a motel up in Santa Barbara. Now, I never spent much time in Santa Barbara, but I thought it'd be nice in the morning to go see the mission and go to the museum and a few other things like that. But it didn't quite turn out that way. We had a nice day. I went over to a clubhouse up there for the AA meetings, and I got the coldest shoulder that I ever got anywhere. And I left there in a hurry. I went back the next day, the next morning, and found some of the guys in the kitchen. You know, if you want what we have most of the time, the place to get it is right back there. You know, not so much out here. Go back in the kitchen. Get your hands wet, you know, do some dishes. Yeah, go chase something to eat and talk to the guy that's shaking so goddamn bad, or the gal that's shaking so bad that they can't sit here, even on their hands, you know. That's where I learned what this program was all about. But anyway, the next morning was Sunday morning, and I felt so good about getting away from L.A. and away from that SOB, because I used to lay all my resentments on the communists, because then I didn't have to blame any of my friends or myself for what was going on. See? That's known as a... I guess passing the buck, no. I guess there's another word for it. I can't grasp it right at the present time. But anyway, that's what I was doing. So we went out, and the family went to church, and I drove around town a little bit. I picked them up. We started to go down to the museum in Santa Barbara, and I didn't know it didn't open until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So here we are, about 10:30 in the morning, gallivanting around Santa Barbara, not knowing what to do, not knowing anybody up there. So there's a little park I saw, so we went down to this little park. It was right next to the railroad station. So I went over to a bar over there and got a cup of coffee and was sitting there. And of course, in this bar, like most other bars, there's always a good loud drunk, you know. And he's arguing with the chef back in the kitchen. And I pick up what he's saying, and I said to the bartender, I said, "What's going on with this character, you know?" He said, "He wants a knife." I said, "What the hell does he want a knife for? Is he going to cut his throat, you know?" He says, "No." He says, "Some Ruskies are coming in on the train, and he says he's going to kill them, you know?" I said to myself, what the hell is going on? Here I have managed everything so beautiful, and here I am. You're right. I went over to the station, and the train stopped, and off they got, all his bodyguards. And I stood closer than I am to Bob right now. And I'm telling you, I thought to myself, you stupid son of a bitch. You come all the way up to Santa Barbara, and you didn't bring your gun with you. And I looked at that little pig-faced, bald-headed, you know what, and I thought to myself, it's a good thing I didn't. It wouldn't be worth it. You know, it wouldn't be worth it. And there's a big commotion behind me. And here was the cat from the bar, and he had gotten a knife somewhere, and he was trying to make it over there. And part of the camera crew from TV grabbed him, and then a couple of cops grabbed him and took him away. So it just shows you how well we come to manage our own lives. Now, that's a bit of my own experience. Now, the other reason for telling you that, how manageable my life is today, is that I thought, generally, I just talk off the top of my head at any given time, because I don't speak often at a big meeting. I speak mostly at small meetings or at the office or at my house. We have three or four people sitting around the table. That's the way I still like it, because I think we can get a little bit more honest that way. You know? Like you, I'm inclined to talk ahead of myself when I'm up here. I'm inclined to talk about what I hope it will be like rather than what it really is like right now. Now, that's a natural thing, because our particular way of living, I think, has always been that way. We've always been a step ahead of ourselves in what we hope for, what we would like to see, what we'd like to be, what we would like to become. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's basic to our nature. We always want the better things in life for ourselves. But anyway, I sat today and I thought, well, I'm going to get my thoughts in order. There's a few things I'd like to talk about, but I got to have some notes up. So I proceeded very quickly today to run through my head and run through a few other things and got about 8 pages of notes. Big lettering, about the size of this, you know. And then I left them home. So here I am, and all I'm going to be able to talk about is what I usually talk about, what it's like right now, where I'm at, what I think of the program, what I understand, some parts of the program, how I handle some of the things that come up in my life, and I'll probably be out in left field most of the time. And if you can follow me, fine. If you can't, well, that's just the way it is. Because I take things pretty much a day at a time, an hour at a time. And I'll have to start a long ways and perhaps give you some indication of the kind of person I am now, the kind of person I was in the beginning. Because I don't think that we change that much, any of us, in our inner life, our inner living. I think we do become what we've always been directed toward. I wasn't born in the United States. I was born a long, long way from here. I was born in Paisley, Scotland. And I grew up in a family that was pretty closely knit, very religious family. My father was on the stage. He was a headliner. He was a comedian. We had a lot of fun in our life. We had a lot of laughter, a lot of singing. I became a dancer when I was very, very young. And that sort of laid out a pattern for much of my life. Because every competition I was ever in, I won. Except one. And that one, I kicked off a shoe during one of my routines. And the judges disqualified me because I kicked off a shoe, even though I continued in the competition. And there was a big uproar went up because of this. And the judges wouldn't change their mind. They declared that I was the best dancer there, but that they were not going to give me the trophy. And that sort of laid out something in my life. I always had to be up front. I always had to be number one. And I think maybe today, in some ways, it's still that way. I don't think that's necessarily bad or wrong, but I think it's something that I have to be very careful of. Because like so many other people, my ego is pretty strong. I've got a lot of pride. I hate to be a loser because I felt that I was a failure for so many years. And I hate to lose at anything. And it's pretty difficult at times for me yet not to push my way in. But you see, I've always found out in my life I never had to push my way to the front. People always pushed me to the front. I never liked too much responsibility. As I say, I have to be very careful of my nature as I know it, not maybe as you see it or think you know me. See, I know me better than any one of you do. It means to me that at any given time, I have to be careful of Jimmy Kinney, okay? Because I know the extent that I can go to even without thinking and pushing myself ahead in the ego area. It's very easy for me to do that. Now, I have to be very careful of it. And that's one of the reasons that I don't exert control in my life. Rather, I discipline myself to do only certain things. I don't speak at many big meetings because it is inclined to build me up within my own self to something that I'm not. I'm pretty much a private person. I don't like to reveal myself too much to too many people. I've always been that way. I'm practically a loner at times. I'm not a recluse, as some people state, but I prefer sometimes myself and the things I am doing with perhaps one other person, my wife in particular, to getting out in the crowd. I prefer it that way. It's nothing to be proud of and to be ashamed of. That's just the way I am. And I feel sometimes that I get pushed into a corner. And I've been pushed and pulled by so many pressures throughout my life, including the addictions, that I resent it almost within myself to even feel the way I do. I hope you can understand what I'm saying there. Sometimes it's very hard to talk to people who are new. I know there's a lot of people new, fairly new to the program at this meeting tonight. And I'm always concerned with a newcomer. I'm inclined at times to get into myself, even when I'm speaking, and get lost in what I'm trying to tell myself. Because here we're not teachers, we're not preachers. We're here to learn, every one of us, from the first time we come to a meeting. I remember when I made my first meeting, how afraid I was. I still case every place I walk into. I want to know where the nearest door is out and where the nearest window is. And I sit facing the door, because I want to get out in a hurry if anything happens. I've always been that way. I don't turn my back to a door yet, you know. I guess that's self-survival. I got in too many problems, backing myself into a corner. So I try to leave that area open. Most important thing to me, of course, when I speak to anyone, is basically the steps. When we discuss the steps to any great length, I think all we do is complicate them and make them harder to understand and harder to work. The steps are everything in my life today. I don't have to consciously work them, but I have to work them. This program becomes such a part after a while that you work it naturally. When I first came around, I had to work it because there was no other way to go. I didn't work it, I was going to die. That's where I was. I came in, I was an abject failure in every department of life. And I mean that completely and fully. There was nothing left. And I had to surrender, I had to give up. And in doing that, it was hard because I couldn't think, I couldn't speak. It took me about 6 months to be able to put more than one sentence together at any given time. And I used to get so angry at myself that people would walk away from me. I would try to say something and my tongue would fall over my eye teeth and I couldn't see what I was saying, you know. It was terrible. And I would get so angry I'd leave the building and I'd go out and pound on a wall, you know. Hit my head against the plaster, you know. Punch my way through doors. Put my hands, you know. So angry at me, you know. I didn't know how to change. I didn't know how to have any affection for me as a person. I hated myself so much, I'd look in the mirror and I'd spit in the mirror in the morning. This was even after I was clean and sober for a while. And I didn't know what to do. And I went along like this, but staying clean. And I got a cake after a year. And right up to 10 minutes before I got the cake, I wasn't sure whether I could accept it or not, because I didn't know whether I'd been clean all that time. I think I wasn't confused. I did not know. And I said to a guy I knew, I said, I don't think I can go up and get that cake. He said, why not? I said, because I don't think I've been on the program for a year. He said, where have you been every night? And sometimes during the day. I said, I've been at meetings. 2-3 times a day. 14 meetings on a weekend from Friday night to Monday noon, you know. Up into the jails, up into the road camps, you know. And he said, well, would you come to a meeting if you'd been loaded? And I said, hell no. He said, then you got a year in. That's the basis that I took my cake because I wasn't sure, you know. And after a little while, I began to get in real trouble then, mentally, emotionally and spiritually. And I guess this is the part that goes into the 12th step. You know, I'm jumping from the first to the 12th step. But sometimes that's the way we are in the beginning. It's all we seem to know. To try to stay clean a day at a time and try to help somebody else. All the other steps will fall into place as we go along. Stay clean. And I ran into a lot of trouble. I ran into trouble with my family. I couldn't sit down and eat a meal with my family for 2.5 years. I got emotionally ill, incomplete, ill-equipped to live, you know. I could scarcely work. But I kept going to meetings, kept talking to people, kept going on 12-step calls. And I got so bad one time I couldn't get out of my bedroom. Year and a half on the program, couldn't leave my bedroom. And I couldn't talk. I sat there like a vegetable. I couldn't open my mouth. My wife at that time came in, she said, "What's wrong?" She said, "You want a cup of coffee? You want a cigarette?" And I sat for 3 days like that, on the side of the bed, at the bathroom to get rid of the coffee and back to bed, as far as I could go. I couldn't leave the house. I was terrified. I had more fear in me then than I ever had previously. I was afraid to leave the house. I had nothing to depend on. I hadn't found any kind of higher power that I could depend on. And I didn't want what the religionists had been trying to give me all my life. Because you see, when I was a kid, I never played hooky from school. I loved school because I could learn there. But I played hooky from church every chance I got. I couldn't stand all that stuff they were telling me because I didn't believe it, you know. And I would take off and I'd go up into the hills in Scotland. Up into the hills above town. In fact, I saw a little something just this morning on TV, a little flash. I guess it was this afternoon. One of those old Tammy shows. She was up in the hills looking down on the town. It took me right back to those times when I was 7, 8 years old. And I'd go up there and I'd look down on the town. And I'd look over the old castle ruins. And I'd lay there in the heather, smell the heather. And I felt so good compared to what I felt when I was with people and down in town and helping my father with his act and dancing. That was all fine, but it wasn't me. I was always afraid. Thank God that fear is gone. I'm at ease now. Very often I'm uncomfortable, but I'm at ease. Like everybody else, I was uncomfortable coming up here before the meeting. I get the butterflies, I get the jitters. But once I'm into doing what I'm doing, I can go ahead. I can feel at ease about it. But to get back to the main thrust of this thing,